The House and Senate have cobbled together their $1.46 trillion tax overhaul, and now they're trying to convince Americans this plan is going to help them. Polls have found approval ratings for the tax reform bill at something like below 35%. Let's get an economist's take on the tax bill as we say hello to Michigan State University economics professor Charlie Ballard. Charlie, it's a pleasure to welcome you back.
Thanks for having me on the program. Good to talk to you.
So let's start by hearing the sales pitches for the tax reform. First, here is the president as he talked to reporters over the weekend.
This is going to be one of the great gifts to the middle-income people of this country that they've ever gotten for Christmas.
And here's Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn of Texas talking on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
We're going to get the economy roaring back again and improve pay and increase jobs and make America more competitive in the global economy, as well as simplifying the tax code and giving everybody in every tax bracket a tax cut.
So, Charlie Ballard, as an economist, in your view, true or not, is this a boon for the middle class?
Not particularly. The vast majority of the benefits of this go to very wealthy and very high-income individuals. The big thing is a great big reduction in the corporation tax rate, and so who's that going to benefit? That's going to benefit the people who own a lot of stock. The average family doesn't really get a whole lot.
And GOP lawmakers and the president say, hey, giving that large tax cut to corporations that we're talking about here ultimately means more jobs and more money in workers' pockets. And Democrats say this trickle-down theory has been tried in the past. It has never panned out for everyday taxpayers. What are your thoughts on this trickle-down approach the Republicans are taking?
Well, the evidence is that trickle-down doesn't trickle down very much. These are benefits that are targeted at the very wealthy and the very high income and at people who own a lot of corporation stock. You know, indirectly, I think there could be some effect, but I think the effect is likely to be small at least any time in the foreseeable future. In fact, I'm less optimistic. I've done some research on this sort of thing over the years, and I'm less optimistic now about this kind of policy than I would have been 30 years ago.
Why is that?
Because of changes in the corporate culture. It used to be, back in the 20th century, if a CEO got some extra money, he, and of course he is the right noun because it was almost all men at that time and still largely men, the executives they'd think about investing in plant and equipment. Today, some of that will happen, and that will increase the productive capacity of the economy. But an awful lot of executive today, the first thing that they think of is mergers and acquisitions, which may increase their market power and allow them to raise prices, but it's not going to do much for the average person. In fact, it may hurt the consumer. They'll be thinking of buying back shares to pump up the share price, and they'll be thinking of giving additional dividends. None of those does anything to improve the productive capacity of the economy, and thus they don't do anything to raise wages. The prospects for wages are fair, but this notion that all of a sudden everybody's going to get a $4,000 increase in their wages is just nonsense.
Is there anything you see in this bill that would be of particular importance to Michigan's economy, either positive or negative?
We're a sort of a medium tax state, but we do have relatively high property taxes. And if you have a large home with high property taxes, there's going to be a $10,000 cap now on the amount that you can deduct. Also, fewer Michiganders are going to be deducting or going to be itemizing their deductions anyway, because one feature of this tax law is that it doubles the standard deduction. And it only makes sense to itemize your deductions if your itemized are bigger than the standard deduction. Well, with the standard deduction going up, fewer people will choose to itemize. That is a simplification, and that's one of the aspects of this that I think comes down in the plus column.
Now, the president and congressional Republicans are touting how this bill will bring back corporate money and jobs from overseas. And certainly, as you and I have talked about so often in this program, Michigan's economy has taken a hit from companies moving overseas. Automakers and the suppliers have been doing it for years. In West Michigan, big companies like Perrigo have moved. Does this new tax bill, as you see it, motivate companies to bring profits and jobs back to Michigan and really the rest of the country?
It might do some of that. Bringing down the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21% makes our tax rate more competitive with other countries. However, one thing that I think needs to be pointed out is that the corporate tax law is not just the tax rate. Even at a tax rate of 35%, the old rate, lots and lots of corporations paid relatively little in the way of corporation tax because of various tax preferences, various what some people call loopholes. And as a result, if you already were paying little or nothing, which is true of many American corporations, then reducing the nominal rate from 35% to 21% doesn't really do much. So I think there may be some effect in terms of less of an incentive to park money overseas. I don't think that'll be huge. I don't think that'll be transformative, but I think there may be some move in that direction, and that's a good thing.
We're talking with Michigan State University economics professor Charlie Ballard, getting an economist's take on the new Republican tax overhaul. President Trump promised just a few weeks ago, and here's his words, "We're going to eliminate tax breaks and complex loopholes taken advantage of by the wealthy." From what you've seen so far, has that promise been kept?
Not really. That makes a good talking point and a good slogan. But the fact is that the vast majority of the benefits of this law are going to be reaped by those at the very top. If you're in the top 0.1%, this is a fabulous bill for you. If you're in the top 1%, this is a very, very good bill. The average citizen doesn't get much. In fact, some ordinary people will end up paying more taxes. It's important to note that in order to meet with some of the arcane congressional budget rules, a lot of these tax breaks for individuals are scheduled to phase out after 2025, whereas the corporation tax break is scheduled to stay on indefinitely.
When we look at that long range, look down the road a little bit to when that happens, what kind of assumptions does this bill make for all of this to be able to be sold to the middle class?
Well, one thing that I think is worth saying is that this will increase deficits very substantially. Now, of course, Speaker Ryan has said that this will lead to such an explosion of economic growth that it will pay for itself, thus there would be no increase in the deficit. There's no evidence that that will happen. It may lead to some additional economic growth, but I think all of the evidence suggests that it will not be close to large enough to not increase the deficit. And at least some folks do worry about deficits. I know I do, and all of our other unfunded liabilities. So that's something that I think will make it difficult to sell to some parts of the American public. I think the biggest thing that makes it hard to sell, and I guess we'll see how this plays out in the 2018 elections, the proponents of this bill keep saying about how it helps the middle class. I think middle class households will learn that they had, in some cases, modest tax cuts, in some cases, modest tax increases. But I think the word's going to get out sooner or later, and already has gotten out some, that most of the benefits of this go to people at the top.
We also remember, speaking of House Speaker Paul Ryan, back on November 2nd, he promised, "We're making things so simple that you can do your taxes on a form the size of a postcard." How much more simplified does this new tax bill make our tax code and the process of doing our taxes?
Very little simplification. But the one thing that does simplify is the increase in the standard deduction, which means that maybe as many as 15 or 20 or 25% of households who currently itemize their taxes, they will look at that and just say, okay, well, the standard deduction is so big that now it doesn't make sense for me to itemize. And if you decide not to itemize, what that means is that you don't have to keep track of all of your contributions to charity. You don't have to keep track of your mortgage interest and your property taxes and your state and local income taxes. I mean, you'll have the records there somewhere, but you don't have to spend that weekend in March or April pulling out your hair trying to find all those records. And that is definitely a simplification. Other than that, there's not really much in the way of simplification. Certainly, your tax return will not fit on a postcard.
We're talking about your concerns about the deficit, about the nation's deficit. So if we look at this balancing act of the promises of giving a boost to the economy and the worry about increasing the deficit, which side of that equation wins out in your view?
Well, in my view, we shouldn't even have been talking about a tax cut at this time. just basic macroeconomics tells you that the time for big tax cuts is when the economy is in trouble. And sure enough, in 2009, the economy was in big trouble and we had some tax cuts. And all the evidence suggests that those helped to reduce the severity of the Great Recession. It was bad enough without those tax cuts. It would have been even worse without them. But then when the economy is in good shape, as it is right now, we're at or near full employment, that's not the time to step on the accelerator. In fact, many economists are concerned that the Federal Reserve will look at, here we are humming along in third or fourth gear, the economy is growing nicely without any fiscal stimulus, and now the Congress and the President are going to stomp on the accelerator with this fiscal stimulus. The Federal Reserve may respond to that by raising interest rates further than and faster than they otherwise would have. It's a very delicate balancing act that we have when the economy is already, you know, unemployment is the lowest that it's been in 17 years. This is sort of backwards in terms of when you should be cutting taxes. And then for the longer haul, you know, not everybody worries about this, but I will tell you that I do worry about we now have the federal debt held by the public is about $15 trillion. To paraphrase Senator Dirksen, a trillion here and a trillion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. And even without this fiscal stimulus of the tax cut, it's scheduled to grow by several trillion in the next decade. And this adds another trillion or trillion and a half to that. I am concerned about what we will leave to our children and grandchildren. What it looks like is we're going to leave crumbling infrastructure, a lot of debt, and remember, we currently pay about $430 billion a year in interest on the national debt. It's that low because interest rates are low. If the interest rates were to go up, as they may, that will mean that the amount that we have to pay to service that debt will go up, and that's even more of a legacy burden that we will leave to the next generation. And so I am concerned about that. I really think that we should be paying a whole lot more attention than we are to trying to balance our federal budget to reduce that burden.
Michigan State University economics professor Charlie Ballard. Always a pleasure, Charlie. Thank you so much.
Thanks, and have a happy holiday.